You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to David Shapiro from Sassman Securities, accompanied by Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. And I'm going to start with you, David, because we're quite good at bashing South Africa, justifiably so, it must be said. But we have to now have a look at a couple of positive things, and that is it's linked to inflation, which is under control. It's also linked to a working paper from the South African Reserve Bank, which is proposing a 3% target for inflation, and also the South African 10-year bond rate going below 10% for the first time for 3 years. Also at the same time, this could be all linked to the rand strength and everything, is the soaring PGM stocks. It's the second time they've done it in about a month, and that of course is so good for the fiscus.
Oh, and how? You know, it's absolute surprise to me. Because I watch the market every day, and I like to look at what's gone up, what's gone down, and you start to build a pattern in your mind. And I think what alerted me to the market, you mentioned the one yesterday, was the fall of the 10-year bond below 10% since, I think it was last, as you said, 3 years ago in 2022 at the time of COVID. So that was the one. The other, I looked at 91 share price.
Yes.
And it was up nearly 8%.
Yeah, what
and I
was
said,
that?
Why?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, in other words, why would a company whose earnings, you know, earnings growth, which is what it was, an earnings contraction, because when I see brackets in the numbers, I start to get a little worried, you know, things are going backwards. And yet there was nothing really that Hendrik said, you know, you can make a story about him going into the Middle East or something like that. But there was nothing spectacular there. Nothing against Hendrik. Really, I mean that sincerely. It's just conditions in the market. And the market goes up 8%. So it gives you an idea there's massive money around. Some of it might just be hedging type money, or alternatively, they're local institutions who feel, you know, that shares are cheap and they got to go in. So there's something there that's driving the market up. We've got another update, as you mentioned, by there's quite a big, what with the platinum price was almost up 4% today. Yeah. Suddenly Valterra, which is the old Amplat, which was down yesterday and starting to lose momentum, suddenly shoots up 8 or 9%. So, yeah.
And it's been, and one of the reasons is not just the platinum price, but also BlackRock has taken an extra stake up to 6 1/3% now. So, yeah, something's brewing there, and it has been for a while. It's ever since all the platinum mines cut costs. Viv, it's not your area, but you're a keen watcher of everything. So would you be cautiously optimistic? We GDP's rubbish, PMI's horrible, business confidence is down in the dumps. So we've got to celebrate something, or South Africans have got to celebrate something. And inflation and the Reserve Bank are two things to celebrate, I think. And that bond and rand market, very, very good indeed at the moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Reserve Bank is, one of the best performing parts of government. What they've done with regards to inflation controls, as well as the rand. I mean, people complain in South Africa about, you know, the rand weakening and so on. But, I mean, compared to our peers, Brazil, Turkey, you know, and in fact, like, Turkey is wealthier than us. Brazil is, like, larger than us. And those places have not had anywhere near the stability that the South African Reserve Bank has managed to, you know, give to the country. And not just this last governor, all our governors have been, with, you know, slight exceptions for short periods of time, have been exceptional, managers of the currency. But regarding the platinum price, I mean, the thing is up almost 20% in the last month. Apparently, there's demand from China. That's like, you know, pushing things up a bit. They see even jewelry demand is also on the rise in China, which might be interesting because, I mean, platinum has generally been recently an industrial story with regards to, you know, vehicles and so on. But maybe there comes a point where the difference in price between platinum and gold becomes more due to the, to the jewelry demand, the supplementary demand here, or the substitution demand rather, where if you go to the shop and buy yourself a platinum jewel, put a piece of jewelry, and suddenly gold is so much more expensive, then obviously the market you pay for platinum goes up as well, because, you know, it's a linked demand around jewelry, which is going to be interesting, I think, price factor for the white metal.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely something going on here, and it runs this thing. And it's before you go on, David, you saw Wayne McCurry, who recently retired. You saw him on Friday for a catch up, and he's been very, very bullish, or was very bullish in his portfolios for platinum stocks. And of course, as soon as he retires, the thing takes off. So, but anyway, I'm sure his successor has maintained that position and is starting to do well. But you were going to say something, David.
All I want to say, one of the countermeasures against your argument about the platinum PGMs, and I'm not separating them into rhodiums and that because I haven't got those prices, but if you look for the last 3 years, they've been very range bound in rand terms.
Yes.
That at the top end now, you know, that they hover in terms of an ounce. I'm talking rand per ounce or something because that's all I can convert it to. It goes between 17,000 and 19,000, like a, you know, looking like a hospital chart. And it's at the top end now, admittedly, but it hasn't broken through into any high levels. You know, it was higher at one point than this in 2024, and certainly a lot higher than that in 2023, and so on. You can go all the way back to 2021. So that's the point, is that, you know, they sell it and receive rands, and if the rand does strengthen, it does take a little bit of the shine or burnish off, you know, the kind of movements we're seeing in the price at the moment.
Okay.
So, but still, you know, it's the share prices are going. I wish they would just do a little bit more to make a clean break of it. But, you know, they're also in this kind of trend. But at least they're pointing on the upside. You know, they're more on the upside than, say, on the downside, ready to break through.
Okay. I'll come to the commodity prices later on. Viv, let's look at what's happening overseas. We've got the new German Chancellor probably at this very moment meeting with Trump. Trump's bill is getting some stick from an ex-South African, and I find that whole thing extraordinary. Things have gone quiet on the US markets, let's face it, gratifyingly so, I think. But it never goes quiet when Trump's up to mischief, and Elon Musk as well. The things Musk has said now that he's got his key to the White House in that ceremony, it's quite amazing. Viv, I'll start with you on this one before David weighs in.
The thing about Trump, about Musk, is that he actually does seem to believe some of these things, you know what I mean? So the things he's saying around the deficit does seem to be something like based on true belief, as opposed to just like trying to make some kind of political point, I would think. And it might actually be a factor going into the midterms, because he's somebody that can go out and, you know, push through things like, for instance, the more deficit hawkish people like, you know, Messi and so on. That being said, look, I mean, the thing that no one wants to talk about is the fact that the U.S. deficit is due to very, very popular programs. It's called, you know, retirement programs, welfare programs, medical programs. These are things that are driving the U.S. deficit. It's not so much, you know, discretionary spending with the possible exception of the military. Yeah. And nobody wants to cut the military when China is rising. So the idea that you go in and you cut, you know, enough from the U.S., you know, budget through waste and fraud is not quite there. Surprisingly, the U.S., you know, despite all the pressures out there, seems to have a reasonably well-functioning, non-corrupt government. And so if you want to really do something with the deficit, which probably needs to be done, I mean, he's correct in saying that when you get about like 20-something% of your budget going towards paying for interest payments, it's not exactly a recipe for future stability. But I mean, how are you in a democracy going to cut old age pensions or, you know, child health care or, you know, those kind of things? That's just not possible at the moment.
You know who made the same point as you did? Is Jerome Powell. In a private interview, well, one of those economic clubs that they have, those interviews, at the time of Doge, at the time that Elon Musk is at his height, he said exactly the same. He says, if you want to cut the deficit, it's the social programs that make up all the amounts. And Lindsay, if you think about it, the only way to cut it is to outgrow it. You know what I mean? To grow the economy. You've got to grow the revenue stream rather than trying to cut the cost, you know, stopping people using the photostat machine or taking two spoons of sugar instead of one. It's not going to do anything. You know, so I think many of the programs where they cut people is not going to show any meaningful cut in the deficit. That's where it lies. You've got to grow your way out of this.
Talking about growing your way out of it, the ECB did something very interesting today, and the markets reacted strange. Well, the currencies reacted strangely too, I think. I mean, cutting rates to 2%, almost saying we believe that Trump's policies are going to affect Europe and cause turmoil, so we're going to have some kind of economic buffer against that. And I've got the euro now up another 0.25%, the dollar under pressure once more, 114.50, we'll call it, that exchange rate, and things going well. Both of you, actually, I mean, the European markets, are they on your radar as well? Or because I know a lot of people have been looking at European banks in the last 6 months or so. European equities in general, have they sort of caught your eye as people are saying, well, maybe America needs to be trimmed a bit and we should be looking at Europe, particularly European banks, which I know have been the focus of a lot of interest recently?
Yeah, look, I mean, because one thing I did see about Europe, I don't know if you guys saw this. Do you see the Irish GDP number coming out?
No.
Hit the roof. Wow.
Really?
They did more in the last quarter than the Eurozone has grown in the last decade. I'm not joking. In the last few months, Irish GDP
look at the chart.
It's amazing. Through the roof. Yeah, but look, unfortunately, the Eurozone as a whole, I'm pretty pessimistic about. I do think that, you know, especially with the tech focus that I do tend to have, they've just kind of regulated themselves out of the market. It's insane that all the brains that create all this tech in the UK, US, sorry, are European. They are from, they're from England. They are from, you know, France. But they are not, creating the value in the Eurozone. They're creating it in the US. And quite frankly, yeah. You know, looking at, the Eurozone going forward, I mean, what is the sectors going to grow? Are they going to be making handbags for the Chinese forever? because their car sector is falling apart, quite frankly. Because, I mean, they're not going to be able to compete. I mean, Tesla was enough of a challenge, but BYD, when that comes into the world market, unless they have, like, you know, tariff restrictions, the value proposition for a BYD vehicle versus a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW is just ridiculous. Are they going to be, you know, relying on banking? What is the European advantage going forward? And the idea that they can repurpose their car sector for defense, I mean, that is, I just don't see that going forward. So I'm really concerned about Europe in the long term, because I don't see what exactly Europe is doing out there. They're not manufacturing, except for basically, like I said, luxury goods. And, you know, everything else about the economy there doesn't seem to be in great condition.
Talking about BYD, by the way, BYD is launching three new models in South Africa. It launched them in April, and it's expanding its dealership network to 30 to 35 by next year. I mean, that's quite big, 30 to 35. You know, I mean, there'll be no BMWs. It'll be BYDs from now on, David.
Yeah. If you go look at the distributorships, I know Mercedes is cutting back on the space that it takes, which was all along. You know, the top end of the market is absolutely being ravaged by these new Chinese models, and there's so many. I don't know. I just see names of motor cars now that I've never seen before. You know, where does this come from? I can't even pronounce them. But, I mean, I can't remember them. But, listen, these are not bad, hey. In South Africa, you just want to get from A to B. That's it. And on our roads, it's better that you have a car that falls apart if it hits a pothole than a Mercedes, which, you know, you'll never afford to get repaired. So don't underestimate what and look at We Buy Cars. That's all they want. They want the Chinese models. You know, they don't want
David,
Mercedes or BMWs, you know.
David, I think you went through the Japanese kind of, or the Korean thing. Yes, they used to be garbage. I mean, I've looked at a new vehicle recently for my wife. These companies are offering you a 10-year, million-kilometer guarantee on your drivetrain.
Is this the Chinese market?
The Chinese companies in South Africa, they're offering vehicles that have unbelievable features for under 600, 500,000 rands, quite frankly. I mean, things that the stuff you wouldn't see on a million rand Honda, you're getting for a 500,000 rand, vehicle. And like I said, the guarantees that they're putting, I spoke to a mechanic recently, and he was saying that he does not see any of these vehicles coming to his workshop because they are under such massive warranties. They don't take them to mechanics for repairs. It's just like I mean, a million 10 year warranty on your drivetrain. That is pretty strong, you know what I mean?
Don't underestimate.
Yeah, and remember, like the Japanese, they started off, they were whatever, until Toyota became like the definition of quality. And the Kias and the Hyundais used to be the cheap cars until, if you look at now, the Kias and Hyundais are quite expensive. I think the Chinese, they make the iPhone. They make a lot of the high-tech stuff in the world. There's no reason these guys are not able to make cars really cheaply. I was amazed at the quality we're getting out there.
Lindsay, just to bring you up to date,
just
as we got on air, the news came out that Mr. Xi and Mr. Trump had spoken.
Okay.
And I was looking at the market, because when I looked at the market initially, it was hovering in no man's land. But I now see that U.S. markets have gone into quite strong positive territory, particularly from where they were. So the NASDAQ, which was down zero, flat, is now up 0.5%. Mm-hmm. And the S&P is also up 0.25%. But I think that's on the news. And European markets have also picked up all in the green, on the backdrop of this talk. What came out of the talk, I haven't seen. There's been no news. And it was reported on the Chinese side, not on the American side.
And it was also reported yesterday that Trump and Putin had talked for 75 minutes, and Putin said to Trump, "I'm going to retaliate for what they did to us." And Trump says, oh, "Okay, fair enough." And still no word of sanctions, extra sanctions against them. It's absurd. But anyway, he's talking. At least he's talking to them. At least he's being proactive. David, you had other points to make. You said you had a few points to make.
What have you got? One.
Yeah, that's one. Okay.
The other thing, Viv will love this, because in the top 10 stocks, in the top 10 U.S. stocks today, Broadcom, which is another chip maker, is now in number 7 position above Tesla. Okay. If you include TSM, because it is quoted in America, that actually comes in at number 10, kind of pushing Walmart out. So in the top 10 capitalized companies, highest value companies, and I'm including Taiwan. There are three chip companies now. Hmm. NVIDIA, which is number 1, Broadcom in number 7, and TSM in number 10. So just interesting how, and they weren't there. What? Last year they weren't even there. Or 2 years ago, certainly NVIDIA wasn't there. So it's quite incredible to see how these companies have grown in value, pushing out JP Morgan, Walmart, Eli Lilly, all of those companies.
And will it continue? Will the domination continue, Viv, on this one? It's just a phase.
Do you know who Mary Mikkei is?
Yes.
She's a famous analyst. She used to have an annual report on the tech sector. They used to come out every year. And I think the last one she did was like in 2019. Mm-hmm. She just released a new report, I think this last couple of days. It was like 340 pages. And I've looked through it, right? It's amazing. Some of the stats there are crazy. It's by far the fastest adoption of any technology in the world. Mm. And the one thing she mentioned was the fact that as much as the revenue growth in for instance, the best performing one, which is OpenAI, has gone like parabolic, the amount that they're spending is even higher.
Yes.
And all that money goes to these chip companies here. Exactly. And the other interesting thing here that was amazing was that, take a guess at how much per token costs have dropped in the last decade.
How much?
100,000 times. Not 100,000%, 100,000 times in the last decade. Okay, that's amazing. And she's also mentioned the fact that, you're starting to see, for instance, patents, in the computer sector have more than doubled from the historic average in the last year or so. And we are also seeing, for instance, effects coming through, in the pharmaceutical sector, where people using new AI like techniques have dropped the testing time for, the first stage of drug testing down by like 50%.
Because of AI.
It's the same time that things are happening, but probably because of AI with things like AlphaFold and so on. So it's a huge report, but there's so many stats in there that are just mind blowing. OpenAI basically. The one thing you mentioned was this. Usually in the past there was a saying that the future is here, but it's not evenly distributed. So there's parts of the world that are in the future and some parts of the world are in the past. With AI, because what happened was in the last couple of years, everywhere in the world has gotten broadband technology because of the last revolution, the internet revolution. Everywhere in the world is using AI. The amount of people using AI in India is way more than the amount of people using AI in the US. So AI consumption in places like sub-Saharan Africa are way ahead of schedule for what the adoption rates were for like cell phones. And in fact, 90% of the use of AI is outside the US at the moment. So it just shows that it's not going to be a case where the U.S. is going to produce it, but it's not going to be like, oh, you're going to wait 10 years for whatever to happen elsewhere. And here's another stat that's amazing. She did a stat on driverless ride shares, in San Francisco, which is the earliest adoption city, right? When these things first came out, Waymo and stuff first came out, around about a third, 37% of rides, taxi rides were by ride share, right? Down to 19%.
Yeah. It's all automatic.
The automatic has gone from 0 to 27.
I mean, yeah.
So they've overtaken Uber and Lyft and stuff in San Francisco in a year and a half.
I spoke to an analyst from UBS who does the motor section. You know, he loves, first of all, I'll tell you what, he's an engineer. He knows motor cars. They strip the Chinese vehicles. And we're absolutely amazed at the quality because you're getting a lot of European engineering. So that was not the point I'm going. He says he visited San Francisco and went on one of these rides. He says it was absolutely incredible. Felt perfectly safe. Just got in with his family, sat down, and never looked back. He says it was the most incredible experience.
And is it just San Francisco, or is San Francisco the one that's embraced it the most enthusiastically? Is it elsewhere? Would it work in New York, for example?
San Francisco is the first, but I think they've gone to 5 new cities now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So San Francisco was the first. And in San Francisco, in a year and a half, they're basically doing 50% effectively more than the Ubers and stuff of the place, right? They've taken that market share away from them. Like I said, I mean, as David mentioned, it's much safer. And if you are speaking to like women, especially, they are very nervous about getting some of these vehicles because, of the kind of like stories they hear. And they're much actually more comfortable getting into a driverless vehicle than in a vehicle with some unknown man. It's a thing. And I think once we have, like, for instance, these things coming to South Africa and so on, I can easily foresee that, we would see the takeoff being quite spectacular.
I'm not sure about that, but you never know. But just a couple of things I wanted to say. The first is that there I was last night watching Germany and Portugal play out a very dreary semi-final Nations League match and Ronaldo scoring. Meanwhile, Viv is ploughing into a 340-page report, and that tells you something about success and dedication. Gentlemen, this goes out to both of you. Are companies spending too much on R&D, or are they absolutely right in predicting what is going to happen in the future, and they must spend the money now? Viv, I'll start with you on this.
Okay, again, from the report, I'm not being like a clever here, but no. One thing they did mention was the fact that we are seeing, spending in terms of like, into R&D and, infrastructure build out being even at a higher rate than the rocket ship that we're seeing with revenue. So, for instance, OpenAI, massive losses they're making at the moment. And the question that they put up there is that who do you think is going to last out? The company that has a little search bar that makes them $100 billion a quarter in revenue, or a company that has to go out and raise funds every so often just to basically keep on in the AI race? So I do think that down the line, it's going to be a case of the biggest pocketbook wins. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure that, investors out there are going to be willing to basically spend enough money. And what kind of valuation do you need to put into, OpenAI to just add more to this loss-making engine at the moment? When you do, like I said, have Google definitely all in on AI, Microsoft all in AI, Meta all in on AI. And these companies have, 20, 30, 40 billion dollars, per year. So I think $75 billion per year for some of these cases here of spending that they want to do on AI. So, I mean, it's a huge amount of money. So, yeah, I do think that OpenAI has to do it, but I don't know if they can basically afford to do it for much longer.
Okay, David, this amount that's being spent at the risk of the near-term balance sheet and everything doesn't put you off, no?
No, they've got to do it. If they don't do it, they fall behind, and that's the risk that you take. Any business who doesn't try to keep up with the competition will just fall behind. And we've got so many examples in industry, remember, and we can quote them. In fact, I've already forgotten their names. If you go back to to IBM going through the 90s right through to where we are today from the internet, all the changes that took place There's so many companies that were, you know, that we spoke about every day that we can't remember their numbers. You know, just think of the search. Just think of Lotus 1-2-3, things like that. So you've got to keep up. You know, you cannot afford to slacken because, and that applies to businesses at the low end of the market as well. You know, it's not only at the high end where you're developing it and selling it. Apparel companies, whether it's a Nike, whether it's Adidas, whether even going down to distributors, you've got to, you know, use the efficiencies of the software that's being created for you. So as Viv mentioned correctly, I think the next few years is going to be the development of the hardware side of it, which we're talking about. That's why I brought up the semiconductors. And then eventually it'll find other areas, you know, going down there, how to use it. I don't know the technical terms. I don't know how to express these technical terms, but it will change as we saw with the internet. I think the one thing in our favor, we've got the internet. Remember 20 years, we never had the internet. So for me, I find it exciting, but that's why I can't be bothered about British American Tobacco and
you can't be bothered to diversify your portfolio.
No, what do you call it? Those sacks that you put in your mouth. You know, I don't know. These things are taking off, and everyone's getting excited about a nicotine sack or a slow burning vaping. I don't know. I say, really? You know, this is what you want to invest in?
Before you know it, David, you'll be buying a BYD and dumping your BMW made Mini Cooper. Yeah. Okay, let's have a look at some markets now, gentlemen, because the round is...
There's one point I have to make, and this is rather distressing.
Okay.
This is the other one. Brown-Forman, that is the maker of Jack Daniels,
yes,
is down 16%.
Why?
Today. Because people are not drinking anymore. That's the problem. So even a brand like Jack Daniels has seen a slowdown in organic growth. In other words, like for like is falling. And if you go through the other ones, you know, other famous ones like Diageo, Pernod Ricard, all of those are down as well. There's as people start
young
to
people
play,
are not going to the pub anymore. Pubs are closing left, right, and centre in the UK, and people are not going out and drinking anymore. It's not cool to drink anymore.
You can't believe the queue for the Nintendo, the new place. I don't know what they call it because I'm not a games player. But the console, whatever it is, new game. There've been millions of people just lining up, sitting on camp chairs, you know, outside the shops to get it. So that's the mind of the youth today. A little miswired, I don't know where their priorities are.
I know that Nintendo stock is up 32% so far this year, so it's done rather well. Viv, I see you as a gamer sometimes. Viv, do you ever sit down behind your Nintendo Nintendo?
I used to, before I had obviously the wife and the kids, you can't do that now. You play games, like especially the games these days, you've got to be absorbed for hours sometimes. And you just can't do that with kids. But I was just mentioning around alcohol, but also any kind of sin product, alcohol, tobacco, whatever you want to talk about, Ozempic has a huge impact on that. There's real evidence that people that take Ozempic don't just have lower cravings for food, they have lower cravings for most of the sin products, including alcohol as well. So I think that is also something that people are underestimating. As Ozempic becomes a bigger and bigger part of, like, you know, look at the number of overweight people in the world. And another thing to know about alcohol is this. It's one of those things, it's a power law, where the top 10% of drinkers consume the majority of the alcohol. You know? The people that drink every day drink the most alcohol in total.
When I was at university in London, Viv, they used to have something called the Circle Line pub crawl. In other words, there's a yellow tube line called the Circle Line because it goes around in a circle. You get off everyone, you go to a pub, have a drink, and then dash back onto the train and just keep going. They now have the Circle Line zero alcohol pub crawl. So you don't drink alcohol, you actually drink a zero beer or an alcohol-free gin or whatever it is. And I thought to myself, what's going on with the youth of today? But no, it's to be applauded. I mean, for example, you just look at the cost it'll save for the National Health Service in the UK longer term, with people not having their livers removed at huge cost. So it's generally a good thing, but if you're a Diageo shareholder, not so good. Right, enough of cars and alcohol and 340-page reports on things I don't understand. That's why Viv is with us, one of the many reasons. 1774 is the dollar rand, which is a 0.5% fall for the dollar. The British pound against the rand is 24.13, barely changed. The euro rand is 20.32. The euro down 0.2% against the mighty local currency. Euro dollar 114.50, 0.3% up for the euro, despite the ECB cutting rates again. And the British pound is 1.36 on the nose, which is a pound, which is a third of a percent up against the greenback. Commodities, gold price 13.65, up nearly a percent, or $31 an ounce. Platinum on my screen, David, 7.8% higher, $1,140 an ounce, or $82.50 an ounce. And palladium, a laggard, but still up on the coattails of platinum, up 1.3%, or $13.50 to 1,016. What's that PGM basket? It warrants attention, I think. The S&P 500, you mentioned it earlier on, it's now up just over a third of a percent. It's broken through 6,000. The futures there is 6,003. I think they expire. I think we've got triple witching or something in a couple of weeks' time. But anyway, above 6,000, nearly 0.4% up now. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield is 4.38.5. Bond market's doing well globally. And what else have we got here? Bitcoin, 105,000, we'll call it down just slightly. South African 10-year, which we've already mentioned, it's back above 10% now. It did dip below there this morning, 10.05% at the moment. And what else have we got? Oil price, which I haven't given you. Brent crude oil is down again. It's $64.55. $65.57. Thank you for refreshing. Which is up 1.1%. And West Texas, $63.64, up 1.25%. Anything I'm missing there markets-wise, either of you two? I don't think so.
Other than the prices, some of the prices today.
I'll go to that now. I've got on my screen here, as I said, dominated by diggers of white metals, Sibanye-Stillwater, 11% up. Valterra, formerly the platinum-producing wing of Anglo-American, up nearly 9%. Northam's up 6.25%. Implats, 5.4%. And Anglo, the parent, up 3.8%. Downside, Alphamin down 3.3%. Spar down 3.2% after its numbers this week. And Equitas down 2.5%. Any others, David?
No, those are most of them. Thungela has come under quite a bit of pressure. This was the stock of 2023, which has just fallen back on the fall of the coal price. Nothing else. Most of them, a couple of gold shares have just retreated slightly and some retailers. But it's all platinum today. But, that's where the big gains on the JSE were. And dominating value as well, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Just value today, $35 billion.
Crikey.
Terra, getting used to it, made a 27% today of the market. Yesterday it was 30%, 8.6 billion rand trading. So a lot of activity around that. And, yesterday was down, today it's up. So obviously, either institutions are coming in or they're BlackRock users. Kind of put, the market going.
That's a big story. It really is. Tonight, gentlemen, I will continue my sloth-like existence by watching Spain against France in international football.
But
I
will also,
yes, tonight. I want to see Lamine Yamal, the 1 billion euro boy, see what he can do. But also, I'm going to be watching Mertz and Trump because when he came up against a straight talker, i.e. the new Canadian leader, Mark Carney, he didn't fare as well, Trump that is. And I think that Mertz is an organised, disciplined, not typical German, because that's a stupid thing to say these days, but he's a straight talker. So I'm quite looking forward to that. Viv, will you be watching that one?
Yeah, well, the thing is that if you look at the stuff that comes out of this year, generally they are a bit more friendly than what Trump says, when these guys are not in the room. And I think that's going to be the case again this time around. I think the examples where he doesn't do this is with places that have no power, like Ukraine and South Africa. That's where he tries to pull these crazy things.
If he comes across an intellectual man who's articulate, he falls apart because he can't match them. as we saw with Carney, and I would imagine the same will happen with the German Chancellor.
Good, I hope so. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, as always, David. Okay. Bon voyage on Saturday. If you can fit us in, that would be great. If not, we'll speak to you in a couple of weeks' time. David Shapiro is from Cessman Securities.
I'm going to be drinking that non-alcoholic beer.
Oh, God, what a terrible prospect. David is from Cessman Securities. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.